You're listening to Outback on 95 BFM.
You are back, and that was The Same with 1979. And I'm on the line to Ani Tonga, the curator of Pacific art at Auckland Art Gallery Toyo Tamaki. And we're speaking about Declaration, Pacific Feminist Agenda. How's your weekend going?
Hi, Theo. It's going well. Thank you for having me on the show.
Can you hear me okay now?
Yes, I can hear you perfectly.
Cool. Yeah, it's a kind of recurring theme of the phone call era of Art Bank.
Hey, and it's also Omicron, so at least it's not like you're on mute.
So you're in this role of the curator of Pacific art. It's a new role. You're the first person to hold it, although, you know, you've worked in a number of galleries over the past few years. So I was curious if we could just start, you know, a little bit about you. What does your role as curator of Pacific art encompass, and what's been the kind of experience of developing that with the Auckland Art Gallery?
Sure. So the curator of Pacific art is a new role, first of many, and so with that are lots of other firsts, but essentially I am charged with setting the kind of direction for Pacific art, which includes our research focus for the next 3 to 5 years, as well as our direction of exhibitions and maintaining and strengthening the collection at Auckland Art Gallery, which currently holds over 17,000 artworks. My experience has been, you know, as a first, many learnings, a big learning curve. But essentially, I think with that, it's quite an exciting time for us because it means that lots of the work that I'm doing now is foundational. We're going to be strengthening and building a foundational collection. And also, I think in terms of exhibitions, and this is where Declaration comes in, setting the pace of where we're going to go with Pacific art. And what people are probably picking up is that it is a very focused, researched, also quite a light show, and this is how we're going to develop Pacific art at Toyo Tamaki. And part of what's great about this role is that I'm able to ensure that there is consistent representation of Pacific art, of the Pacific as a place, and of Pacific cultures.
Is it that quite good thing of having this permanent position means that you can take a long view of things and kind of, you're not a visiting curator, you're not being brought in to do one exhibition, you can do small shows or develop kind of themes long term.
Yeah, absolutely. And I've never had the opportunity to focus solely on Pacific art in any of the curatorial roles I've been in. And so this really, in terms of a new job and the place in Auckland, the place of the biggest Pacific population, was a no-brainer for me. I was going to go for this job. And once I got it, if I got it, you know, hit the ground running.
Well, the artists you've put together for this exhibition, you know, like you were saying, you've got this wonderful mix of really, I think, you know, canonical artists like Marty Friedlander and Lonnie Hutchinson. And then you have mid-career artists like Kalaisalite Ohila. And then you have emerging artists like Sione Monu. And you have this really wonderful mix. Was kind of getting that balance for this, because this feel, you know, the show is called Declaration. It's a declaration. Was getting that balance really kind of key to the project?
Well, thank you. You flatter me too much, Theo. a really kind of important ethos as part, or my kind of curatorial ethos and kaupapa at the heart of it, is just fostering artistic practice and enabling our artists to kind of find the new creative surge in their practice and support that where we can. And so that's really led me to work with artists at a range of different points in their career. So that's just something that's quite innate for me. You can see I've, in the past, did the Tautai tertiary exhibition at St. Paul Street that used to be biannual. I also still do a little bit of external marketing at Elam. I like to see what our artists are creating and where the future is, really. And so, yeah, I think that declaration also reflects that it's not really this kind of breakdown of emerging or mid-career, but really where these concerns and ideas are crossing over for different artists.
Yeah, there's this kind of historical lens that comes up against, yeah, really, really contemporary practice. You know, I think, like, because Sione Monu is someone who I'm familiar with their work, and I think a lot of people are becoming more familiar with their work because they've been exhibiting quite a lot in the past few years. They were at the they had work commissioned for the circuit screening about 2 years back, and I remember that was
only yesterday I saw that work too, and I thought when there is time, the right time and place, and I stopped fangirling, I'm going to work with Sione Mono.
Yeah, it is like that kind of, yeah, just that striking thing. And I'd been overseas for a couple of years, and it felt like, yeah, you come back and suddenly there's this artist who everyone has at the back of their mind. Yeah, and then, you know, their contribution to this exhibition is this wonderful series of portraits.
Yeah, and Sione, who is an overachiever, has also done a separate commission at Auckland Art Gallery called Kindred with Manuha Apai via Dangi Dao. And I think those two emerging artists are so exciting for me because, like many others, they have other kind of creative outlets. I think Manawaza and Whanau Spa is also an amazing poet and writer. But I think that's emblematic of lots of artists. It's really the medium to tell the message.
So when you kind of started thinking about this show, because I think it's been about, is it about a year in development for one of these, you know, a show of this scale?
Can you repeat that?
That was a fragment of a question.
There are cars going past.
So you started, you know, how long does it take to put together a show of this scale?
Oh, well, I started in March 2020, and I remember pitching the show at about May. So I'd say this one was about 18 months. But I am also a feminist, so I feel like I've been working on this show all my life.
Yeah, like just slowly kind of collecting. Because that's also, yeah, when I think about the works in it, I think about something like the Lonnie Hutchinson work, which is this, you know, you've brought together these series of performances through their video documentation. And it is like, it feels like a work that you see the curator putting in the show, and you can kind of get that sense that they just filed it away when they first encountered it.
Yeah. Oh, the hilarious thing is I've written about that work before for Lonnie without ever having seen it. She showed me a still. Because I wrote for Lonnie as part of her survey show Blackbird that was at Gus Fisher, and then of course for Art New Zealand. And it wasn't only until recently where I said, oh, Lonnie, these works are amazing. Do you have still images? And she goes, oh, do you want to see the tapes? I went, oh my God, you have tapes? Which is, you know, if you have performance artists, often documentation of their works are few and far. They're incredibly rare. And so she loaned them to us, and we've got to have this work in the show to give people a real kind of sense of history, and that these ideas Pacific artists have been working with for a long time, you know, that are akin to what they might understand as of feminism, like the body politic or these kind of interventionist performances in public spaces. And so between her work and Ioane's documentary, I thought it was really beautiful that artists might get introduced into this history of Pacific performance art in Auckland.
Yeah, the documentary is a really interesting inclusion, something that, you know, I was surprised not to have kind of heard about before, because it's just, it feels like it's this kind of, you know, fundamental moment in performance.
Oh, absolutely. And I think it's quite in that work you see avant-garde performances by a young Yuki Kihara. I would say she's still young, just in case she's listening. But these are all key performances of the way that whawhawhinga too have been using their body to unpack, repack, deconstruct, reconstruct ideas of gender. And I think that's really innate to a Pacific worldview, or mine anyway, where gender fluidity has always been part of the way we understand and connect to people.
Well, I was wondering, you know, the majority of the artists in the exhibition do have a connection to Aotearoa. Like, you know, they've lived here or they've exhibited here widely, but there are a few in there that are coming from, you know, they're based either in Australia or somewhere else in the Pacific. And I was wondering, you know, getting that mix of people who might be familiar names to art goers here, and then having to reach afar, how did you start thinking about those artists from beyond our shores?
Well, as part of a kind of pioneering work, as you say, or what I started to do when I got into the role, was also reimagining how the Pacific has been defined as a place and the many ethnicities that fall under that big umbrella. And our worldview is super expansive, it's rich, it's complicated, and this is what I wanted to bring to the way that we would come to understand and create exhibitions with Pacific concepts and artists. So one of the highlights of the show is that we were able to bring over internationally renowned Pacific artists for the first time, like Teloi Havili, who has been showing regularly at International Biennial since 2002 and spends the time between Bougainville and Australia, as well as Latai Tamwe Pau, another leading performance artist of Tongan heritage. And there are very few performance artists of Tongan heritage, so it was a real highlight to be able to offer our audiences this kind of expansive view of the Pacific, and for those artists to come here and create these ambitious commissions for the first time.
With these artists, with these big names, were you kind of, did you have that idea to include their practice in some form, or were there specific artworks that you thought, I can put these in conversation?
Well, I think like many artists, like even the emerging ones, you just kind of keep track of artists that are coming through, artists internationally, and just, you know, when the right time permits, when there is resource to match your ambitions, that we can work together. And that was certainly the case for Latai and Teloi. I've followed their work for a long time and had just been waiting for the right context of which we could show their work and that we could premiere great works here in Aotearoa. And all those things, you know, I think the universe, the ancestors and all the gods aligned that we could do that.
One of the... I mean, I think one of the most incredible things, pieces you've included in the exhibition, which we haven't touched on yet, is Jasmine Togo Brisby's sculpture,
which is,
I mean, that's really like a kind of hallmark work. And there's someone who has, you know, been exhibiting for a long time, but to my knowledge hasn't made a work with this kind of a monumental scale to it. Was that commissioned for this exhibition?
Yes, we commissioned her work Open City in Suspension for this show. And Jasmine, like many of the commissioning artists, well, just all the artists really in the show, really rose to the challenge of working in a way perhaps that they hadn't before. Because Jasmine, who is a multidisciplinary artist, she's also one that gets in there. She likes to use her hands. She's very involved in lots of the process of her work. And so for this new commission, she worked with Human Dynamo, a company in Wellington, to be able to work at the scale, which required, of course, a different way of working, but ultimately, I think, created one of her most monumental epic works to date. And lots of the work she's been doing, I think, has led to this point in time. She's just come off the back of a survey exhibition at Art Space in Mackay, which I believe is due to start touring Australia. So all these things kind of met, I think, to allow her to create this beautiful work.
Yeah, I saw her give a lecture a few years ago. And for people who aren't familiar with her practice, a lot of it is, you know, she often uses photography and kind of recurring historical threads of the investigation of the Pacific, South Pacific slave trade and how that affected her family and her family's direct, you know, I don't know what the term you'd use, but their enslavement in Sydney. And it was amazing because I'd seen this lecture. It was very moving. And, you know, so when I saw that work, I had all this knowledge. And I went with a friend who wasn't familiar with Jasmine Togo Brisby's practice. And they were also just had this, you know, this, it kind of gives you chills.
Mm.
And it's amazing that this work has this just potency when it is, you know, it's an abstraction.
Yeah.
It's got these, you know, it's very much in a kind of contemporary sculpture dialect, but it just, it's that potent kind of feeling. And it's just amazing to get that in an exhibition, I think.
And I think, I mean, I've often heard her use, and this has been the title for one of her works too, that it's often bittersweet. You know, these works that she makes which create visibility and each one reaffirms their connection to her great-great-granny, of course, who was abducted from Vanuatu at the age of 8. So every piece of work, every bit of research she does, reaffirms this connection and this family lineage. And I think for the wider South Sea Island community, she really does reflect perhaps or represents them for those that haven't found that connection yet or haven't been able to trace that work. And for Open City, the Wunderlich panels of what she examined, you know, she's done in other works through photography and through smaller sculpture works. And so for this one, which we talked about maybe 2 years ago, of what would you do if you had more time, more money, more resource? And she said, I want to make a ceiling. And lo and behold, a year and a half later, she has made this monumental, epic ceiling installation. And I think it's the kind of work that transforms you. You know, I remember when she was telling me about the Wunderlich panels, I had no idea. I'd been in many civic buildings across Australia and in Aotearoa where these ceiling panels feature, and I'd never thought about it, but I will never think about it in the same way again. And I think that's a real potency of her work that draws people in to see these beautiful, ornate panels that tell the history of her people. And when you go back into those buildings that have the Wunderlich panels, you will never, ever not think of South Sea Islanders, and you won't think of Jasmine Toga Brisby.
Yeah, it's a it's hard to kind of, I think, summarize the, I don't know, the incredible power of this work. Mm-hmm. There is this, you know, there is a real somberness to the work as well as, like you say, that kind of bittersweet quality. And there's also the similar somber tone in the ecological distress and kind of intensity of Latai Tumaupoe's performance work, which is this, you know, little a sequence series of video performances where she is struggling to dance inside a tank that is filling up with water. But there's also a humor, and I feel like we'd be remiss to not touch on that. I mean, the exhibition opens with Jessica Cohansel's Auntie FM, which is this audio installation filled with, like, you know, radio ad parodies, and it's like a really kind of, the exhibition's a real journey, and it's a real emotional journey. And was getting that kind of tonal, you know, navigating that tonal subtlety a challenge through the making of the exhibition?
Oh, absolutely. I am a feminist, but I think through the development of this show, and of course of the book that'll come out in July, was a whole lot of grappling. I think I talked myself of being a feminist, being a feminist in and out of it maybe 5 or 10 times, but also really just the tone and the journey that we take people through. And what was really key for us is that we did not want the show to start from a deficit perspective, or that people would come in and we'd be trying to convince them of feminism, but really for them to be able to pick up on these things. As you say, there's a somber tone to it, but there's also real lightness and comedy that begins to grow as you are immersed into the work. And Auntie FM is a classic example of that, but also of Coco's strength to use humour as an inlet for people to maybe think about the harder political realities of all the aunties that you know, of Māori and Pacific women and communities. And so I love that our audiences get a mix of that as they go through the show.
I think one of the other things that's really great about the show is that it, you know, maybe it's not in the title, but it's very much a queer show as well. And I think that comes across really strongly. Again, was that also something that you kind of knew would be part of it from the beginning?
Yeah, absolutely. I think we touched on it a little bit, but the Pacific is a place where gender fluidity has always been part of our understanding of our worldview that dates back as far as our ancestral knowledge and deities. And so it was important for this show too that when we say we're empowering women, we mean that to empower women, you are also empowering the whole community, which is why we have men in the exhibition, which is why we have Leithi and other artists from our rainbow communities. And I think that's been one of the issues of Western feminism often. Well, it was a very easy choice to have our queer artists because they're part of our future.
And I'll finish by asking, I mean, this is a big question and you can say you don't want to answer it, but if you did have the room to expand the show, who would be the first artist you'd be like, oh, well, I'm gonna put their work in now?
Oh, Theo, you're trying to get me in trouble with some artists. I wouldn't say that there were, like, I'm quite happy with where we landed in the show. I wouldn't say that we missed out artists that are like, oh, if there was another chance. But I think if we were to revise the kind of format of the show, if it wasn't a focused kind of exhibition, and say if it was a survey, which is very different, you know, it's time-based, and there was more space, then I think that you'd be looking at a different show with a lot more artists, and a lot more artists from across the Pacific as well.
Thank you so much for speaking to me this morning. It's a fantastic show. It's just open, so you can head along and see it at Auckland Art Gallery Toyo Tamaki. It's on the top floor. And it's been lovely speaking to you.
Thank you, Theo. Such a pleasure to be on the show, and thank you for putting up with the sounds of cars and police on Grey Lynn. In Grey Lynn.
Not to worry. Yeah, have a great weekend.
Okay, you too. Bye.
Bye. So that was Anne Tonga talking about Declaration of Pacific Feminist Agenda. We're going to jump into some dimmer now. This is Degrees of Existence. Stay tuned to BFM.
95 BFM's Art Bank.